Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. Well, this week, UK music revenue's back at their CD peak, sort of. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Maltz, and with me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
On this week's show, UK music retail revenues are back to where they were at the peak of the CD era in 2001. So long as you imagine that no time has passed in between. Plus, the brewing legal battle over Kanye West's shameless interpolation of a Donald Summer track. But first, Chris, tell me something else that's caught your eye in the music world this week.
Well, over there in the US courts, there was a hearing on an ongoing trademark infringement case. And you might be thinking, trademark infringement cases, that sounds a bit dull. But it's one of my favourite kinds of trademark infringement cases, which is where you have what is basically a tribute act or a tribute show that has come up with some way of using the brand of the band they are tributing in their marketing, which some people might argue is kind of suggesting it's an official show when it clearly is not. So let me ask you, Andy Malt, if I asked you if you wanted to come along and buy a ticket, I'm not buying you the ticket, you're going to pay for your own ticket. But if I was to say, okay, I'm organising it and we're going to go and see the Earth, Wind and Fire Legacy Reunion, what would you think you were buying a ticket for?
I think I'd probably think I was buying a ticket to see Earth, Wind and Fire.
And then you might be thinking, are they still going? But what if the show name was changed to the Legacy Reunion of Earth, Wind and Fire Alumni? Now, what do you think you're going to see?
Now I have no idea what I'm watching.
So basically, the company that owns the trademark of Earth, Wind and Fire, which is owned by the family of founder member of the band Maurice White, they are suing the promoters of a show that was originally called, confusing Andy Malt, I think you will have noticed, it was originally called the Earth, Wind and Fire Legacy Reunion. It is now called the Legacy Reunion of Earth, Wind and Fire Alumni. It's basically a tribute show, except some of the musicians did actually perform with Earth, Wind and Fire back in the day. They're just not the famous people that worked with the band back in the day. And so the allegation is that they're basically using the Earth, Wind and Fire brand, the trademark, without permission. They're tricking people into thinking it's an Earth, Wind and Fire show. The argument on the other side is, well, the musicians who are performing were in Earth, Wind and Fire. They are alumni. So the name of our show is just a statement of fact. It's not trademark infringement. That's the basic gist of the dispute. But I always like this because I always find it amusing when you see the tribute shows, how either in the name they have chosen or often it's just the way they set it out on the page in terms of point sizes. There is a bit of a business out there, isn't there? Tribute acts. Hey, I'm not dissing tribute acts, but you do sometimes see posters for tribute shows and it's like, yeah, that's kind of taking the piss. I remember once being in a cafe in the Belgian seaside town of Ostend and seeing a poster for an Adele concert. And the venue name was quite big on the poster. Adele's name was really big on the poster. And it, I was like, Adele's playing. I mean, no offence to any listeners in Ostend, Belgium, but it's I can't imagine it would be the first stop on an Adele European tour. Bearing in mind, she doesn't tour that much. And when I got closer to the poster, I noticed in much, much, much smaller point size, tribute show underneath. And then I realised it wasn't a photo of Adele. It was a photo of a pretty good lookalike of Adele. So it's always fun, isn't it, when you get the slightly sneaky tribute shows, which can sometimes, but not always, result in a bit of a trademark litigation.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first case like this. I suppose normally it is a tribute act and just a standard tribute act, like no one who's actually been in the band in whatever capacity at another time performing in a tribute act, just a tribute act, and people who have gone, it would be nice to play this band's songs. But when that sort of band uses the band they're tributing's name in their name, then that causes issues. So, I mean, you've had the Ultimate Led Zeppelin, the Beatles Experience, and the Rolling Stones Experience. They've all been sued by the original bands that they were paying homage to. Pearl Jam in the UK sued a tribute act called Pearl Jam. Obviously, written down, it's a lot clearer, the distinction between the two bands, because the tribute act had two M's in Jam. So, I mean, I'd say that was pretty clear.
Big difference there.
And similar to your Adele case, there was a I think German Tina Turner tribute act who was sued by Tina Turner for looking too much like Tina Turner. Specifically in her posters, but that's almost a compliment, I think.
It is. So it wasn't the name that was the problem. It was literally, you look too much like me on the posters. Yeah. You need to change the way you look, change your haircut or something.
Yeah.
It is sometimes, isn't it? As I say, not always the name, it's sometimes the layout of the poster. I'm looking at a poster right now. This is an event that's happening in July this year. It's happening in Upton Country Park. It's called Ladies' Night, and Ladies' Night is in quite big writing, Friday the 7th of July. I've not currently got my glasses on, so I'm about 2 feet away from my laptop. I can definitely see you've got Rihanna, you've got Little Mix, Dua Lipa, Lady Gaga, Britney Spears. Oh, if I sort of go much closer in, the UK's Best Tributes 2 is in much, much smaller point size, below the date and above the name. I'm not suggesting there's anything wrong with that, but just to be wary, if you are in the tribute show business, sometimes your names, your look, your poster, or if you look too much like Tina Turner, you might find yourself in court fighting a trademark infringement lawsuit. But on the upside, you might get a mention on Setlist if that happens. So these are things to aspire for, really, aren't they?
Yeah, but unusually, we're not here to talk about trademark infringement this week. There might be some copyright infringement coming up later on, if you're very good. And we will be talking through some more of this week's other most interesting music industry stories later, including how the bosses of Universal and Warner say they're going to make their companies even bigger in 2024. But first, UK music retail revenues reached an all-time high in the 12-month period up to the 23rd of February, reaching £2.223 billion. What's that? Did you hear me right? Yes, I said an all-time high. The last 12 months outperformed the peak of the CD era in 2001. So I think that is cause for celebration. It is quite a milestone. The same figure in 2001 was £2.221 billion. So we are £2 million up on 2001. It has taken a while, but we finally got there. Music revenues in the UK, at least, are the highest they have ever been.
Ever. And just to clarify what we mean by UK music retail revenues, this stat came from ERA, which is the trade body in the UK for traditional music retailers, record shops, etc., but also the streaming services. So it's basically all of the money that flows in to the music industry through record shops and through the streaming services. And the total revenues today, they are the highest they've ever been, higher than at the very peak of the CD era. Very exciting, providing, and this is quite important, and I want everyone to pay attention to this. There is a little bit of a proviso here. Music retail revenues are at a record high, providing we do not adjust the 2001 figure for 23 years' worth of inflation. So providing we can all agree that we're not in the business of adjusting 2001 stats for inflation, then we have recovered. The record industry is back at the high that it was when the CD boom was at its very peak. That's exciting. We have fixed everything. The industry is back.
Yes, great, great. Absolutely no adjusting for inflation. We will not be doing that. Let's instead celebrate what ERA calls a red letter day for music. It notes that the CD peak occurred in October 2001 when Kylie Minogue was at the top of the singles chart with Can't Get You Out of My Head, and a greatest hits album from Steps was at number one in the albums chart, which, I mean, who could remember a time when that was even possible other than, I mean, actually just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Kylie's still doing quite well, and I think the last Steps album was in the top three when it was released. So, yeah. Times haven't changed that much, I guess.
Yeah, but the point is, in 2001, Kylie and Steps were making the music industry rich by selling plastic discs and driving, as I said, total music retail revenues for that year to £2.221 billion. And then it all went to shit. And by 2013, annual music retail revenues had dropped to just over £1 billion. What miserable times.
What miserable times. Should we just spend 30 seconds remembering the miserable times? Obviously, we've probably got lots of people listening to Setlist who joined the music industry in, I don't know, the last 5 years. And the last 5 years, it's all been about growth and the record industry. We had that little COVID pandemic, didn't we? The live side of the industry completely collapsed. But hey, on the recorded side of the business, who cares about a pandemic? The money kept growing. But for those people who've been in the industry a bit longer, yeah, the late 2000s, the early 2010s were not a fun time to be in the record industry. So as these stats show, basically in 10 years, the record industry basically lost half of their revenues because the shift to digital, let's just say it was a little bit traumatic. Some people would say it was all the fault of piracy. It was all the fault of file sharing. Some people might say that certain bosses of certain big music companies made a series of very bad decisions in the early 2000s. Maybe that was part of it. But the point is, those were the bad times. That's how far the industry fell. And I guess, even though we're not adjusting for inflation, do not adjust for inflation.
We're not going to do that.
We're not going to adjust for inflation. But in terms of how low revenues went for recorded music, the fact that we are now back to where we were at the start of that shift to digital, in fact, we are beyond it. It is, I would agree with Ira, a point worth referencing. Of course, what changed was the streaming boom. It is true that for a while, the iTunes store was a big deal and bringing in decent money, but it never actually brought in enough money to compensate for the collapse in CD sales. It was premium streaming that turned things around. And for the last, what, 7, 8 years, maybe even 9 years now, the record industry has been in growth, allowing us to get to this big, bold day where we can say in the last 12 months, the most money the UK music retail sector has ever generated, providing, last time we're going to stress this, we do not adjust those 2001 figures for inflation.
Yes, I can't stress enough that we will not be doing that on this show. In a statement alongside this announcement, ERA CEO Kim Bailey did note that there is still a long way to go, but added that these numbers show that thanks to the innovation and investment of streaming services, music is on the right track. She described the decade that followed 2001 as an existential crisis for the music industry and said that it was lucky that a new generation of music-loving tech entrepreneurs were able to see a way to a new model based on subscriptions rather than sales. Today, she said, draws a line under 2001 and highlights the fact that music sales have more than doubled since 2013. That's great, but after 20 years of inflation, it's still not enough.
She brought up inflation.
She did.
I mean, she was right to. I mean, we really ought to factor in inflation, but, well, it would just bring down this high. Should we factor in inflation? I mean, the Bank of England does have a little calculator on its website where you can type in a number and say, OK, that's 2001. What would that be worth today? I mean, there are different ways of calculating inflation, but that's quite an easy way of doing it. Should we quickly do that?
I don't think we should.
Well, I just did. I was doing that while you read out Kim's quote because, well, you know, I think we can all agree that we don't want too much positivity on this podcast because that's not what we're about. So if you took the 2.221 billion that the music industry made through selling CDs and all of that sort of nonsense in 2001 and you adjust that for inflation, basically we should be bringing in, as of today in 2024, about £4 billion, which is a lot more than we're actually bringing in right now.
Well, that would explain why we're not yet driving Rolls-Royces into swimming pools again. But surely that time is once again coming in the very near future.
And if you want some positivity, just a little bit of positivity, it is true that the profit margin on digital is better than the profit margin on physical. It's not to say that digital distribution is free. Marketing is more expensive now than it ever has been because we've got such a competitive marketplace. So it's not that there's zero cost to digital, but I mean, compared to pressing up all those CDs and getting them into record shops and all of that, the profit margin is better. So we don't actually need to get up to £4 billion to match in terms of profits. But yeah, if we're just doing it on revenue, we have some way to go. Do you know what we probably need to do to ensure that the music industry is getting back to those figures quicker? Why don't we just freeze out all the grassroots artists and make sure they don't get any money? And then at least the superstars and the majors will get back up to where they were in the CD peak, which, of course, is the strategy that the music industry has taken in recent months.
And that seems totally fair.
Totally fair. Who could possibly have any criticisms of any of that? All is good, I think, is the gist of this first section of Setlist.
Coming up later, the legal battle between Kanye West and the Donna Summer estate. But before that, some other stories from the music industry this week, starting with TikTok, which began removing songs published by Universal this week, having already taken down its recordings. Universal Music boss Lucian Grange said on an earnings call later in the week that his phone is always open. I don't know that that's a phrase. His phone is always open if TikTok CEO Shouzi Chu wants to sort out their big licensing dispute. Although he also said he's not that bothered about the money the label and its artists will lose by not being on the platform because he reckons there are better and more friendly services out there.
Talking of major label bosses, Warner Music boss Robert Kinkel was on stage at a Web Summit event in Qatar this week. He wasn't talking about TikTok. Warner Music are fine with TikTok. They think TikTok are great. But the thing he was talking about on stage at this event was the superfan opportunity. You may remember at the start of the year, both Lucian Grange and Robert Kinkel talked up the superfan opportunity in their start of the year memos to their teams. And in an update on what Warner is doing in this domain, he said at this event that he has assembled a team of incredible technology talent who are working on an app where artists can connect directly with their superfans. He also again claimed, because he said this a few times in recent months, that the majors, with their scale and their global reach, are best positioned to help artists capitalize on the next round of digital opportunities, such as the Superfan opportunity. We look forward to seeing this new Warner Superfan app. I'm pretty sure it won't be shit, but we will see when it's finally rolled out.
Apple issued a statement last week following rumours that it is facing a 500 million euro fine as a result of an EU investigation prompted by a complaint made by Spotify. Its statement wasn't actually about the fine, it was about Spotify, which it says just wants a free ride and doesn't want to pay for all the amazing services that Apple provides to it to help build its platform. Spotify then issued its own statement saying that actually, Apple is just seeking a level playing field. Meanwhile, we're expecting Apple to be formally told to pay that fine early next week.
So that is something for everybody to look forward to. We talked about how things are going so great for the music industry in the first part of Setlist. Of course, we should counter that by reminding everybody that on the live side of the business, whereas at the upper end, at the arenas and the stadiums, Live Nation confirmed again recently, everything's fine. But at the grassroots in live and even in the mid-tier, people are really struggling. Obviously here in the UK, one demand that the live sector has made repeatedly in the last couple of years to help the grassroots and the mid-tier and the independent festivals who are really struggling with surging production costs and the cost of living crisis is, can we just get the VAT on tickets reduced? It did happen during the COVID pandemic. Can we not do it again? The music industry has been making that demand repeatedly, and it made it again this week via cross-sector trade group UK Music. The UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, has a budget statement that he is making next month. And the request from UK Music was, why not use that budget statement to put a VAT cut on tickets? It would really help the ticketing sector. And at the end of the day, Jeremy Hunt, he's not going to be Chancellor of the Exchequer for that much longer. Is he not in giving away money mode? We're running up to a general election. 0% VAT, I say, for tickets. We will see.
And how about we end this section on a little bit of positive news? Because the IFPI has been publishing its annual list of the most successful artists and releases of the last year. Taylor Swift was the most successful artist worldwide overall, while Miley Cyrus's Flowers was the most successful single, and K-pop boy band 17's FML was the biggest selling album. Obviously, two of those lists are topped by American artists, although 17's appearance there does give you a hint that K-pop was very prominent on the artist and album lists. In fact, so much so on the artist top 10 There were no British artists in that top 10, despite how often we're told that the British music industry is constantly punching above its weight on the world stage. But Ed Sheeran, despite releasing two albums last year, only managed to make it to number 11.
Yeah, with BTS on hiatus, four K-pop artists have taken their place, it seems, and appeared in the top 10 best performing artists of last year, according to IFPI, meaning that, the most successful Brit wasn't even in the top 10.
You can read more about all of these stories and everything discussed on this week's episode in the show notes or at completemusicupdate.com. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, the Donna Summer estate has sued Kanye West and Ty Dolla $ign for, and I quote, shamelessly interpolating her song I Feel Love on Good Don't Die, a track on their new collaborative album Vultures One. The estate says that it explicitly denied permission to West when approached about licensing a sample of the Summer track because it didn't want her to be associated with him and his many controversies.
Yeah, you have to pity whoever is given the task of licensing Kanye West samples at the moment. Not only are you having to stick to a budget, but understandably, lots of people, artists, songwriters, do not want their music to be associated with Kanye West at the moment. In terms of this specific dispute, the Donna Summer estate owns a third of the publishing in the song I Feel Love, with the rest of it managed by Warner Chappell on behalf of the song's co-writers Giorgio Moroder and Pete Bellort. Meanwhile, the recording rights in the track are controlled by Universal Music. In its lawsuit, the estate says that it was very clear when approached by representatives of Kanye West that it did not want the track to be sampled or interpolated into Good Don't Die. In fact, it said it told Kanye West people this fact, not only in writing, but also on the phone, and not only once on the phone, twice on the phone. They basically said that the Donna Summer estate wanted no association with West's controversial history.
Representatives for West, apparently because they're gluttons for punishment, also approached Universal to try to clear this sample, but were also rebuffed. The label declined permission, and that resulted in a new recording being made, which used the distinctive melody of I Feel Love, but altered the lyrics. And this unauthorised interpolation, as it's referred to in the lawsuit, should still have been licensed, says the estate. Despite this denial, the lawsuit says, West and his collaborators shamelessly used instantly recognisable portions of Summer's hit song I Feel Love on their recently released collaborative album Vultures One and in recorded live concerts. Getting into the specifics of this interpolation, they said that it used the song's iconic melody as the hook for their infringing song and essentially re-recorded almost verbatim key, instantly recognisable portions of I Feel Love using a singer sound-alike to Summer. We're back to tribute acts.
We are, sort of, kinda, in a very specialised way. I can confirm that it is instantly recognisable as being the melody from I Feel Love because I managed to find this track on YouTube. I had to go looking for it on YouTube because the Donna Summer estate lawsuit confirms both Spotify and Apple Music removed Good Don't Die after they approached the streaming services and pointed out that the interpolation was unlicensed and therefore constituted copyright infringement. However, even though the streaming services did remove the track because of the disputed interpolation, it notes that by the time Spotify removed the infringing song from its platform on the 14th of February 2024, the song had already garnered over 8 million streams in just 4 days. Contributing to West overtaking the number one spot on Spotify's list of most streamed artists. With all that in mind, the Donna Summer estate would like the court to confirm that Kanye West and his collaborators are copyright infringers and they really ought to pay the estate lots and lots of damages.
Now, the Donna Summer estate isn't the only party annoyed by an uncleared sample on Vultures One. As the album was released last month, Ozzy Osbourne hit out at the inclusion of an uncleared Black Sabbath sample in the original version of the track Carnival. After the version of that track with the sample was played at a pre-release listening party, Ozzy Osbourne declared on X that Kanye West asked permission to sample a section of a 1983 live performance of Iron Man and was refused permission because he's an anti-Semite and has caused untold heartache to many. He went ahead and used the sample anyway at his album listening party. I want no association with this man!
Sharon Osbourne did then also comment on that uncleared sample in an interview and implied that they were also considering legal action, although to the best of our knowledge, there is yet to be any actual lawsuit filed in relation to that sample. But who knows, maybe that will follow soon. But the Donna Summer Estate, they have their lawsuit in place, and we will follow this story and see what happens next.
But that's all we've got time for on this week's setlist. We'll be back with another episode next week, and you can keep up with all the latest music industry news every day at CompleteMusicUpdate.com. I just remember, yeah, it'd be hard to crowbar back in now, but I just remember just... I've got a picture of a chalkboard on the street that says, "Tonight, Elton John, steak dinner, £10. Steak dinner, £10, free entry."
Well, how is it an Elton John steak dinner?
That's all it says. I think Elton John and steak dinner, I think it's Elton John performing while you have a steak dinner. I mean, £10 free entry is confusing as well.
It is a bit confusing.